Well, we'll try to get answers to some of those questions that Ross Hawkins has just posed throughout tonight's programme. But let's hear from the woman herself. Fiona Wolfe has been speaking to Radio 5 Live's John Pienaar. Now, you will hear clips of this interview many times, I suspect, over the next few hours, but we thought you would appreciate hearing John's conversation with Fiona Wolfe in full to judge for yourself. Here it is.
Until a very few days ago, you seemed determined to tough this out. That was how it was described to me. The Home Secretary was even more determined, or seemed to be, to see off the critics, those calling for your head. What changed your mind and when?
What changed my mind was the engagement with the victim community, which actually was planned for this morning. But I could tell from the reaction a few days ago by victim groups, and certainly before that, when my letter was published on the website, that there was great nervousness as a result of the perception of my connections with Lord Britain. And so I've been thinking about it for several days. A lot of people asked me to stick with it, but ultimately what turned the tide was less about putting up with the innuendo and negative comment in the press, but more about the victims themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, this is for them.
Yeah. I mean, the Prime Minister, Number 10 Downing Street, have been declaring full confidence in you. Theresa May, the Home Secretary, appeared to be, well, even tougher in urging you to stand fast than perhaps you were yourself by some accounts. Do you think that was there in the end, or did they calculate that it was no longer worth standing by you in this way? Did they think, basically, the game was up?
Well, I spoke to the Home Secretary this morning to tell her that I was likely to make this decision, and that I had thought about it a lot. We debated it. And
did she try to talk you out of it?
I think that we had, as you might imagine, a discussion that ran around all the pros and cons. And I think ultimately I was persuaded in my mind that it was the victims that mattered, and if as a result of this morning's meeting the victims were not confident with me, then I was going to get in the way of this making progress at the speed the Home Secretary wanted to see.
Yeah, it was clear, it's been clear for some time, that you didn't have the support of victims and their representatives, and the list of those calling for you to go has grown and grown. That was always likely to make your position ultimately impossible, wasn't it?
Well, I'm obviously sad that people are not confident in my ability to chair the what is a hugely important inquiry impartially. I don't think that it was going to be possible for me to chair it without everybody's support. I mean,
it's been clear that you haven't had that support for some time.
I think that the way in which it emerged was that the definition of close association perhaps got in the way, and that the perception that I was biased was growing, even though actually it was never said in so many terms. And so the challenge was whether I should just be brave, because this was always going to be a tough inquiry, or whether actually there was enough, you know, there was a huge victim population to be dealt with, as to whether the voices were sufficiently large warrant my resignation.
Now, let's talk about your neighbour, Leon Britton, who has been, as it were, a player in this story as a former Tory Home Secretary who handled some of these similar allegations in the 1980s. Your account of your meetings and your meals with Leon Britton was drafted and redrafted with the help of Home Office officials and lawyers. That's been called collusion. It's been called help getting your story straight from the Home Office. Do you accept then that that weakened your position, undermined your claim to be fully independent?
Look, that was drafting and redrafting, which lawyers do a lot of, and I was travelling at the time as well, so it all needed to be done by email and iterative. What it shows is that I've been incredibly transparent. I mean, the extent to which I've gone to lay out all the connections, all the details, the amount of interrogation of diaries and records has been absolutely huge.
But you were getting help from the department that you were writing to. You were trying to reassure the Home Office, and they were helping you write the letter. That that doesn't look independent. It doesn't look impartial, does it?
Well, I think ultimately it came under my signature, and I had to, the iterations are just, one of those things that happens in the drafting process.
Look, your neighbour, Leon Britton, a former Tory Home Secretary in the 1980s, he's been part of this story. He was involved in, he handled allegations of child abuse while he was in office. And your account of meeting him, of having meals with him, was written and redrafted with the help of the Home Office. Didn't that seriously undermine your own claim to be truly independent, to be truly impartial?
Well, yes, it looks like that with the benefit of hindsight, but at the time I was travelling. There was a lot of investigation being carried out by a lot of different people coming in from various different angles. So it was bound to be an iterative process.
But it was damaging in the end, wasn't it?
Well, with the background of the judicial review proceedings, which the Home Office are the target of, there was an obvious a need to coordinate that. So I could certainly have done without having to publish all these drafts of the letter.
But with hindsight, it was a mistake, was it not?
I think with hindsight, I could not have managed without basically help, and I think the Home Office is just trying to be helpful.
You have no experience in the area of child protection or anything like that. For that reason alone, it's argued, you were simply never qualified to do the job of chairing this inquiry. How do you answer that?
Well, I think the Home Office have made it clear that they actually wanted someone who was independent, like a non-executive serves that role of being someone who can actually question and challenge. But also they were looking for someone who had experience of very large-scale exercises of projects of I've done huge reform programs where you bring everybody together on a very inclusive basis. So it was a sort of inclusive leadership that was necessary to bring everybody together, and then to design a process which was actually really as efficient as it could be, because this inquiry needs to get on with the job. Above all, it needs to report in a timescale that doesn't take 10 years.
Yeah. What sort of person do you think should replace you in this role now? I mean, simply being seen to be part of the establishment of the powers that be is seen by some as a disqualification in itself.
Well, I think, as the media have picked up on, it's really going to be quite hard to find someone with absolutely no connections. I mean, a hermit. But it needs leadership. It needs inclusive leadership, which I can't command because the victims don't have the confidence in me to get behind it. And actually, you need someone who can command everybody's support to get behind this, because that's the only way it's going to succeed.
Yeah, you say a hermit would be needed to tick all the boxes. Are you saying it won't be possible to find someone, who's able to satisfy everyone?
I'm not that negative. I'm sure there will be people out there. Whether of course somebody's prepared to take it on in the eye of a media storm, and knowing that they're going to suffer at the hands of negative comment and innuendo the whole time. And it will take that leadership on an inclusive basis also to protect the panel members, because social media gets to them as well. So it's going to require somebody who is strong. But I suspect,
you think it'll be quite hard to find someone who's willing to take the heat?
Well, maybe there are people out there who have experience of taking the heat. Who knows? But I suspect, I'm quite optimistic that this inquiry is so important that there'll be someone who cares as passionately as I do about protecting our children and our children's children.
Do you regret taking the job yourself? I mean, do you feel damaged by all of this?
I regret two things. Not the damage to myself, but I regret that the victims have been unsettled by the last few weeks over my appointment. And I do wish that this inquiry will succeed for them.
And do you regret what you've been through, these sort of accusations, the questions? Although your integrity hasn't been challenged, your suitability has been relentlessly challenged. Have you found that painful? Has it damaged you?
Of course I find it painful. Who wouldn't? Lots of family and friends have found it painful as well. But it's something that I'll learn from.
Yeah. What was the moment you decided the game was up for you?
I decided that as soon as I heard that the meeting today with the victims had been organised, I thought the outcome of that is actually going to be the tipping point. So I had made my decision a few days back and had warned the Home Office of it.
And finally, do you believe that we will end up with an inquiry that can succeed in, to the extent of commanding confidence, reassuring victims, showing that it's asked the right questions and left no stone unturned?
Well, the big benefit of the last few weeks for me is we've all learned lots of lessons, and we can put those to good use and get the show on the road for the victims. But it does need everybody to get behind it and support it.
Okay, your last word to the victims of abuse over the years who've been waiting for some sort of resolution and are now waiting for some new inquiry to be established?
My heart goes out to them. I think they're very courageous. I think that they're terrifically... they can be proud of being stand up and counted, and they have to stick with it and push everybody into getting behind this inquiry.
Fiona Wolfe, thank you.